across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. We've made it to Friday. It's October 27th. It's another beautiful day to have you here up north from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network or the Civic Media app, by podcast, on social media. However you got here, it's nice to have you here up north in the state of Wisconsin. We're going to unpack the news in just a bit, but it wouldn't be October 27th if I didn't also note, I think we might have one extra listener somewhere in Michigan on the app. And so happy birthday, Chelsea. You know, it's host prerogative. You get to say happy birthday to your daughters. You're going to hear it again in a couple of days here. Here's what's on tap this morning as we get going to wrap up the week here. Let's title this episode, It's the Guns, Part Infinity. Because the latest mass killing in Maine would be tragic enough if Republicans hadn't rubbed salt in the wound by electing a new Speaker of the House who yesterday offered up the usual thoughts and prayers and said the answer to this ongoing American carnage is more guns. Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil will have more about how the new Speaker is from about as far right as the fringe gets in American politics today. Once we get that bad news out of the way, I have to say, we are not normally a sports talk show. But it's Friday, the political news isn't terribly optimistic, and there's so much going on in sports that we're going to talk about. The Badger men's hockey team just upset the number one ranked team in the country. The Milwaukee Bucks opened their season with a new powerhouse combo. It's Packer-Vikings weekend. The Badger football team is on national TV tomorrow night. The Badger women's hockey and volleyball teams are among the best in the country, and they're back in action this weekend. The World Series starts tonight, and Jimmy Costco will be here later to talk about this weekend's second round in the state high school football playoffs. We'll talk to Mark Jacob as well about media coverage of the events of the week. We'll have the weekend weather forecast from Jennifer Fuchitsky, and we'll have you as well if you'd like to join us at 844-967-2789 and our email address radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And you can always comment on our live video stream on Facebook, whether you're watching on the Facebook page for Up North News or Civic Media or a couple of others. It would be nice to have you along and to take in your comments as well. 6 a.m. temperatures across Wisconsin look like this. Up here on Lake Wissota, it is 55 degrees, Madison 56, Waukesha 63, La Crosse is at 63, Wausau reporting 57 degrees, Wisconsin Rapids, 63 degrees, Green Bay, 57, and Hayward, 47. And if I'm not mistaken, and I want to get this right and pull it up here, yeah, this is as warm as it's going to get right here, right now. Go step outside. Take it in. Because those of you who are in the 60s right now, like La Crosse and Waukesha and Wisconsin Rapids, those of you in the 50s, the rest of you, we may not see those for some time. It's going to get real cold for a little while here at least. And again, full details on the forecast on the way. But right now, we're probably at the high temperatures for the day as they start to fall, as a cold front starts to move in to the area. And Jennifer will tell us all about that again in just about an hour or so. We'll tell you more about what Up North News is covering today. But first, let's say good morning one last time to Sam Davison, who's at the Civic Media Control Center down in Madison. Sam, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Good morning.
All right. Yeah, good morning. Sam, if you missed it yesterday, he's not going anywhere. He's going to stay right in that chair. He'll be there Monday morning, bright and early, but with new friends to play with. So there will be a new show on Mad Radio 92.7 starting at 6 a.m. Monday.
That's right.
Who are our new friends, John and Gordy?
John and Gordy of the John and Gordy Show. There we go.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the story on that for us from Up North News Radio. For now, we're saying goodbye to Madison because there will be a new show on the Madison station, 6 a.m. Monday. Now, as I've mentioned plenty of times, Up North News is a separate entity from Civic Media. We are pleased anytime they allow us to come invade their airspace for 2 hours on weekday mornings. But Civic Media also has an immense variety of Wisconsin-based shows. Some are local. Many, like ours, are state-based shows. and a couple of national shows can be found woven through. Some stations in the Civic Media family have their local shows from 6 to 8 a.m., others from 8 to 10 a.m. Madison is getting a truly local show of its own to talk about local news and local issues. We think you're going to enjoy listening to John and Gordy. Sam will still be there as well working with them. But as for the rest of the Civic Media network that doesn't already have local shows at 6 a.m., you got me here still, Monday morning, 6 a.m., but I will be joined then by Greg Bach, whom you hear with Kristen Bry and Jane Matner on As Goes Wisconsin. And Greg is going to be setting his alarm clock even earlier to join us from Waukesha every morning from 6 to 8 a.m. So to me, it's just another sign of the growth, Sam, and the maturation of the Civic Media Radio Network. That is a busy, busy place down there.
Oh, yeah.
We're juggling all the stations, all the shows, all the moves. I just sit here quietly up on the lake. You watch. It's just great. It's like watching atoms bouncing off of each other down there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always getting bigger. I've been watching the network control room for the past couple of days, and it's crazy watching everything fire all across the state.
Yeah, because that was the whole reason for building that whole brand new studio down there, was essentially to be a big old switchboard for all of these stations where all these shows can go different places. And so, you're going to have some new company there, which I got to think is going to be kind of nice, because I mean, I've walked into so many radio stations in my life for jobs, you know, at 4:30, 5 in the morning, and you're all by yourself and it's dark, and you know, so I think it's a great thing that you're going to have. I'll tell you, a little later this hour, you're going to find out why in today's history lesson and music break, the numbers 1989 and 1999 are going to be significant, so stick around for that. All right, at 20 past 6, let's unpack the news. As always, you can reach us at 844-967-2789. Again, 844-967-2789. You can also comment on Facebook. Our live video feed runs on the Civic Media Facebook page and the Up North News Facebook page, as well as the pages for Bull Falls Radio in Wausau and 93.5 The Tap in Chippewa Falls. For that one, search for The Tap FM, and you'll find the Facebook page there for what we do. Would love to have your comments and insight about whether anything is going to happen differently after this latest mass shooting in Maine. Fearful residents up there kept to their homes for a second night as hundreds of heavily armed police and FBI agents searched intensely for Robert Card, the 40-year-old Army reservist with firearms instructor training, who shot and killed 18 people at a bowling alley and a bar in the worst mass killing in that state's history. Streets in Lewiston and surrounding communities were virtually deserted late Thursday night. Schools, doctor's offices, grocery stores, they're all closed. People are staying behind locked doors in cities as far as 50 miles away. Maine's largest city, Portland, has closed its public buildings. And that is exactly the kind of life today's right-wing politicians want you to accept as normal. To them, this is the new normal, and they have no desire to change it. They're not willing to do one single thing to make you safer or to fight this carnage of innocent Americans. In Maine, they don't require a permit to carry guns. I know that sounds familiar. That seems to have been the trend lately. And we have talked at length about red flag laws. Maine politicians wimped out when talking about red flag laws and passed a so-called yellow flag law in 2019 that would require police to try to seek a medical evaluation of anyone believed to be dangerous before then trying to take their guns away. We know that red flag laws, when they're put in properly, work. And red flag laws would have kept those 18 people alive with their families today. Why do I say that so definitively? Because Robert Card was a walking, talking red flag. He underwent a mental health evaluation in mid-July after he began acting erratically while with his reserve regiment. He was committed to a mental health facility for 2 weeks this past summer after, quote, hearing voices and threats to shoot up a military base. A red flag process would have weighed the evidence. A judge would have made a sober decision on whether his weapons should be put in storage until he got the help he needed and was once again ready for the adult responsibility of owning lethal weapons. Dear Republican politicians, stop being such babies about this. People are dying around you. Babies are dying. Mothers, fathers, neighbors, you say you're all about saving the babies. Prove it. Get a red flag process established in Wisconsin before this happens at one of our bowling alleys, bars, schools, malls, anywhere where your constituents have a right to feel safe. Don't say, it's not the guns. That's a lie. You know it's a lie. New House Speaker Mike Johnson, asked about the tragedy in Maine, offered up thoughts and prayers. Of course he did. And he said it wasn't the guns. He said the problem is the human heart. No, it's not. Humans have hearts in every other developed country in the world where this isn't a problem because they did something about the guns. Speaker Johnson said it was all about the Second Amendment and self-defense with more guns. That's the answer. Really? How many people, if the number's not 18 dead, the number's also not zero when I ask this question. How many people would have been mowed down anyway in that bowling alley before the first person could recognize, A, what was happening, that it wasn't balloons or fireworks or something. So recognize what's happening. Go for their weapon, whether it's in a holster, whether it's in a jacket, whether it's in a bag. Fire it accurately through a crowd of screaming, running people. And all of this without being shot himself or without being shot herself. If you tell us that's the answer, that's a clown answer. It's the guns. It's the availability, the easy availability of lethal weapons. Just how much do Republican politicians laugh at your pain? Well, just remember how earlier this year, on the floor of the House, they wore lapel pins shaped like an AR-15. I guess maybe a middle finger pin would have been too direct, but the gun pins were handed out by a congressman who has reportedly a $25 million stake in a company that makes assault rifles. The problem isn't the human heart, and the solution isn't more guns. The problem is Republican politicians who like the way that you have to live in fear right now. It gives them power. You stay scared. You stay a little angry, but you're not doing enough to change things. And so until you change things, until you replace them in our Congress and in our legislatures, this is the America that we're going to have. This is the America that we're going to have to deal with. And while it is tempting to throw up our hands and to say there's really nothing else that we could do, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't stop trying. And we can continue to try with as many elections as it takes to finally elect people who are going to put our safety first, put our lives first. Again, we talk about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And the people who love to talk about liberty forget that life comes first. Again, a crowd that loves to say that they're pro-life. If you really were pro-child, you'd be doing something, anything, for anything more than, you know, fetuses and zygotes. They're actual already born children who need you to step up, to stop being such a baby to the gun industry and to other political voices and political donors. And yeah, they talk really loud and they have a lot of money, but there are solutions that can be discussed, and they don't involve the government confiscating everybody's guns. If you start with the red flag laws alone, you're well on your way toward preventing tragedies like this once again in America. Kia Vakil is coming up next. You're up north. I got a blank space, baby, and I'll write your name. All right, back now on this Friday morning, Up North News Radio, and Kia Vakil, political national correspondent, Courier Newsroom, joins us from Los Angeles, a Philadelphia area native or Philly proper?
Philadelphia area, unfortunately. Born in Philly, raised in the suburbs.
Well, let's get the bad news out of the way. What happened to your Phillies?
Oh, man, that's a great question. Their bats fell asleep at the worst possible time. Major bummer. And Arizona's bullpen is just unhittable. I don't know the last time I've seen, you know, a seventh, eighth, ninth inning stretch of pitchers just completely dominate like that.
I don't know if you have seen this out there on the West Coast, but you've watched Arizona. They went right through the Brewers, then through the Dodgers out where you are, and then through the Phillies. And I don't know if you'd seen this, but every team that has ever eliminated the Milwaukee Brewers from the playoffs has gone on to the World Series, you know, win or lose. So it takes some of the sting off knowing you just ran into a team that got hot at the right time.
Yeah, I saw that yesterday and meant to message it to you, but I'm glad it came up here. But that is crazy and just an incredible stretch of bad luck.
It really is. And I've told people here that I was actually rooting for Philly, for Bryce Harper and the others. Again, great season, just like Atlanta, just like LA. But Arizona and Texas, man, they're the ones getting it done, and they will kick things off game one of the World Series tonight. All right, let's get to our day jobs here, and that includes watching a very busy week in Washington, D.C., where there is a new Speaker of the House, at least so far. I don't know how long these guys stay around nowadays, but while we've got Mike Johnson here, you've got an article over at our main website, upnorthnewswi.com. And I'll just put that headline right to you. What are the three things we should know about Mike Johnson?
Yeah, so Mike Johnson, I might give you a little more than three, but he is a very conservative congressman from Louisiana. He's only in his sixth year in Congress, so he's one of the least experienced new House speakers. But he is extremely conservative. So one thing to know is he supports a nationwide abortion ban. He has signed on to one. He has repeatedly celebrated the Supreme Court's decision to strike down Roe v. Wade. Before joining Congress, he worked at a very, very conservative legal organization called Alliance Defending Freedom, which opposes all abortion and gay marriage. And he has, you know, when he worked there as an attorney in the 2000s, he fought to shut down an abortion clinic in Louisiana. So he is, you know, arguably the most conservative House Speaker in decades. So that's one thing to know. The second is he was perhaps the leading figure to try to overturn the 2020 election in the House after the 2020 election. He spread lies about voter fraud, embraced ridiculous conspiracy theories about Hugo Chavez and Venezuelan voting machines. He said the fix was in. So, you know, Jim Jordan got a lot of headlines for being really, you know, publicly, you know, the face of the Stop the Steal movement and trying to help Donald Trump. But Mike Johnson was involved behind the scenes. And he is as scary a candidate as Jim Jordan. And then the third thing I would say is, I already touched on it, but he is very anti-LGBTQ. He opposes gay marriage. And in a series of, you know, editorials and op-eds and columns written, you know, in the early to mid 2000s, he said some really, really ugly things about gay people. He said that homosexual relationships are, quote, inherently unnatural, that they could lead to, you know, the normalization of polygamy and pedophilia, and that for, you know, it could lead to, quote, a person to marry his pet. So that's Mike Johnson for you. You know, he could disavow those comments. He has not, and that says something.
No, he will not. So let's, now that we know who he is, let's look ahead.
Yeah.
Are we seeing any signs that he wants to do something first that gives the appearance of bipartisanship, however minor it is? Or are there signs that he just wants to go full-on confrontational? Again, we're only a couple days into his term, but you know, what kind of signals are we getting?
Yeah, you are not seeing any big, you know, signals that he is going to try to be more bipartisan than Kevin McCarthy was. If anything, it's likely that he'll be even more catering to the far right because he is more conservative. And because, you know, he's only really served in Congress during the Trump and Biden administrations, when bipartisanship more or less doesn't exist outside of a handful of situations every year. And, you know, Mike Johnson owes his election. Every Republican voted for him, which is going to be shocking. You know, I think not shocking, but I think you're going to see a lot of ads next year in swing district races where, you know, someone like the New York moderates who made the House majority are going to get hammered on this because they voted for a guy who would take away all their female constituents' right to reproductive freedom, their right to marriage if they're gay or a lesbian. But no, there's no signs he'll be bipartisan. He has voted to cut Social Security and Medicare in the past. He's a climate science skeptic. I would be surprised if he suddenly overnight becomes a bipartisan deal maker. He has been a conservative evangelical Christian culture warrior for 25 years.
And of course, for folks that were, we caught that when he said every Republican voted for him, except the one. Derek Van Orden, except good, you know, Wisconsin's very own, or at least we think he still knows where Wisconsin is. Now, it's been mentioned before that, you know, if Johnson is part of a group, if he's part of a group that sees a government shutdown as a good thing, we've mentioned it before, but let's again review some of the real damage that a government shutdown does to people, because you have a lot of people like Johnson who see that as somehow some kind of a good thing, that, you know, government isn't spending money / wasting money, and it's okay if I've heard it described as a pause. It's not a pause if you're among the folks that are directly impacted by a shutdown.
I mean, there are millions of federal workers in pretty much every congressional district in the country, including Johnson's, including all across Wisconsin. There are thousands in each district. They, for the most part, will be sent home. They won't get paid. If they're, you know, a federal law enforcement officer or active duty military or a TSA worker or an air traffic controller, they'll have to show up to work but won't get paid until after the shutdown ends. And that's the best case scenario. You know, if you need a federal loan for a small business or a mortgage, you're not going to be able to get it, most likely. Environmental and food inspections could be delayed. God forbid, you know, a hurricane, you know, we've seen Otis hit Acapulco in Mexico and devastate it this week. If something like that happens in the U.S. during a shutdown, we don't know how FEMA would be able to respond. Kids could lose childcare slots. National parks could be closed. 40 million families or people who rely on food aid from the government through SNAP might not get those benefits. It's not just a pause. It affects people's lives. And, you know, with this Republican Party, the odds are it wouldn't be a 1 or 2 day shutdown. It could be 1 to 2 months.
Yeah, because this is not something where they say, well, we've made a point and now they make a deal. If they really decide to go down this route, they are going to be looking for big concessions from Senate Democrats in the Biden administration, who I don't think are going to give them any, because they've seen, again, slow learners over here. Every government shutdown has hurt Republicans at the next election.
Yeah. But I don't know that that's going to matter because, you know, Mike Johnson saw what happened when Kevin McCarthy, you know, agreed to a 45-day extension of the previous budget terms to prevent a shutdown. He lost his job as speaker. Mm-hmm. I do not imagine Mike Johnson will sign on to a continuing resolution because, you know, he owes his job to Matt Gaetz and Lauren Boebert and all these people. So, you know, there is, I think the odds of an extended shutdown are quite high, you know, because what does Mike Johnson, you know, unless he is secretly more bipartisan or, you know, less, you know, willing to actually work across the aisle to benefit people other than his very small conservative constituency, I think we're in for a long shutdown. And that's going to be rough.
It is. It's gonna hurt lots of people. And unlike others who kind of try to bob and weave around it, if you say to, you know, Ron Johnson, you know, he wants to cut Medicare and Social Security, and he'll say, I never said that. Well, Mike Johnson's a lot of bit more explicit about what he'd like to see.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Johnson has repeatedly said he wants to cut Social Security, voted to cut Social Security, signed on to policies that would cut Social Security. It is, you know, staggering. And there was a video that's going around this week that highlights him. Again, he's anti-abortion, saying that, you know, if Roe v. Wade hadn't ever existed, millions of women effectively would have been forced to give birth. And those children, he never even uses this word, but those children that they gave birth to, forced by the government, would have grown into, quote, able-bodied workers, which would mean that Social Security and Medicare, which could face funding shortfalls in the future, would not have faced those if Roe had never existed. So what he's saying is that right now you see a lot of Republicans, including him, having signed on to proposed cuts of Social Security and Medicare. He said those wouldn't be necessary if Roe never existed because there'd be more able-bodied workers. That's dystopian. That's unbelievable.
And it has no bearing in the current world where there are labor shortages and immigration in need of reform. And you can't say, well, if we'd have just gone back in the past and you know, forced all women to, you know, bear the children that they weren't seeking. Again, it's just a complete lack of respect for the basic economics of our society today. But this is what we have right now. And, you know, let's stick with the abortion politics for a moment, because we're getting close to marking 1 year until the 2024 elections. Things are quieter on Wisconsin this fall, but that's not the case everywhere. And as our national political correspondent, you've been watching several upcoming elections that prove abortion rights remains a major issue for voters.
Yeah, I mean, it is the major issue, one of the major issues in Virginia, where control of their state legislature is up for grabs. Right now, Virginia has a Republican governor, and one of the chambers of the legislature is controlled by Republicans, the state house, while the Senate is Democrats have a narrow margin. If Republicans win both chambers, Governor Glenn Youngkin, who, you know, wears a vest and pretends to be moderate, but is as conservative as most governors, he has said he'll push for an abortion ban in Virginia. He has campaigned on it for Republicans. They are arguing it's a compromise. It's, you know, only at 15 weeks, but it's an abortion ban. And so if Democrats don't win at least one of the chambers, abortion could be banned this time next year in Virginia. And in Ohio, there is a major ballot initiative that could, you know, protect abortion rights in Ohio, going against the wishes of the Republican-led state government. In Kentucky, the Republican candidate for governor, Daniel Cameron, wants to ban, you know, approves abortion bans with no cases, no exceptions for rape or incest. And the politics of that have been so bad for him that he's now saying he would support exceptions because he's on the verge of losing by potentially 5 to 10 points because he's been associated with this toxic position. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Pennsylvania has a judicial race that could impact abortion rights in the future. People support abortion rights. That's what we're seeing. That's what we've seen over the last, you know, 12 to 18 months. And there's no indication that that's going to change anytime soon.
No. And so we'll see that probably borne out in some of these elections and see what kind of lessons some people take away as we move the calendar over into 2024. Keith Akil is Courier Newsroom's national political correspondent for us out in California. Thanks so much. We appreciate the time as always. You have a great weekend.
You too, Pat.
It's worth noting, coming out of our discussion with Kia, something that you should take away from that, that you have Republicans, conservatives, or right wing, that despite the setbacks, they continue to push forward with an extreme agenda that would control women's bodies and remove their reproductive health care rights. And you'd think, why are they doing that? They know that it's a losing proposition at the ballot box. For the same reason they've been doing it for 50 plus years, a relentless pounding away at something, and enough people just stand back and let it happen, or they win enough little victories, makes the difference. It's how Roe v. Wade got overturned. Was all kinds of times getting people to vote for presidential candidates that they'd like to have a beer with, rather than thinking about the real stakes. And they're just continuing to do that. And the as much as politics gets fatiguing sometimes, the only response is to be as equally determined to go vote in every single election. Today's history lesson is next. Here's my problem. The problem with the daily history lesson and music break is I tend to start it with an older song and one that I know and really enjoy, and then I just don't want to start the segment. I'm just like, let's just roll records. I'm ready to bring Sam in here. Sam, when I say roll records, records were these black discs of vinyl that you would put on a turntable. And you,
oh, I know. I used to DJ vinyl and in college at a radio station.
Okay. Are there any turntables in that brand new studio? Like just in case?
Not permanent ones. I think Jorge brings one in when he has his music show on Fridays.
That's funny. All right, we'll bring Gladys down here and tell you that on this day. And why are we playing Gladys Knight and the Pips? I've got the answer to that. They were, this song, Midnight Train to Georgia, was the number one song on this day in 1973. On this day in 1904, the New York City subway opened. Over 100,000 people paid a nickel each to take a ride on the brand new subway. The city of Philadelphia was founded on this day in 1682. We think of Bruce Springsteen as, you know, this legend now, and rightly so. Sometimes it helps to remember the early days, young and hungry and struggling, and then you get your big break. And that clearly happened with this album and the title track off of it. And I bring up Born to Run and the album because it was so hot that on this day in 1975, Bruce Springsteen was on the cover of both Time and Newsweek magazine. Oh, wait, I gotta bring Sam back in here. Sam, Time and Newsweek were the way that people got their news before cable TV. They were made of paper, and you read the words and the pictures, and it was a big deal when they were competitors. And they often talked about the same political story, but they both had Bruce Springsteen on the cover because he was a big deal back then.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, I'm old enough to remember magazines. Magazines still exist, Pat.
I'm just having some fun with Sam's age before he can get mad and storm off because he's already got the next gig lined up here. But I'm looking at these things. I'm talking about records. I'm talking about magazines. And sometimes I hear myself, and I can just hear my 17-year-old grandson going, "Grandpa, what are you talking about?" Never mind, kid. Let's see, we got some more birthdays today. This is the anniversary of the birth of Theodore Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt born this day in 1858. And Monty Python alum John Cleese is 84 years old today. All right, I mentioned a couple of numbers named after years. We're going to talk about 1989 in a moment. Let's talk a little bit about 1999 as Prince released his fifth album on this day in 1982. Of course, 1999 turned out to be Prince's big breakthrough. He'd had a couple of top 40 hits to that point, but this one came down, sold well over 5 million copies worldwide thanks to this title track, also Little Red Corvette, and others. I got some more birthdays for you. Let's see. Lee Greenwood, you know, born in the USA. He is 81 years old today. Scott Weiland of Stone Temple Pilots is 56. He was born in San Jose, California. And I'm saving Duran Duran for Monday when Kristen Lyerly's back here, because anybody who's listened to the show for, you know, 8 minutes knows that Dr. Lyerly is a big fan of Duran Duran. Simon Le Bon turns 65 years old today, and I asked her if she had a particular music request for today, and she couldn't make up her mind. There was Girls on Film, Say a Prayer. Apparently, there's a new Halloween album coming up, so we'll just talk to her more about her being part of that fan club coming up on Monday morning. All right, we've mentioned 1999. If you hear 1989, you obviously are thinking of Taylor Swift, and that album was released this day in 2014. I would say this is my favorite off the album, Style, although Blank Space, which we played earlier, wouldn't be far behind, and then there's Shake It Off, which is, you know, it's got a nice little pop beat to it. But there's a lot more to be said about Taylor Swift and 1989 in just a sec. But first, I want to get one more history note in here. Sam, you're familiar with it was CDs. See, CDs were these things that played music. Anyway, they're called Now That's What I Call Music. You're familiar with Call Music collection? The very first one was released on this day in 1998. Wow. It was a compilation CD with 17 hits. It had Hanson's Mbop. It had the Spice Girls' Say You'll Be There. And then there was Now That's What I Call Music 2 and Now That's What I Call Music 3. The first,
and then they just kept going.
They kept coming. The first 29 of them all went platinum.
Wow.
And I mean, look, again, for people of a certain age like me, you think of KTEL. KTEL Records, it's the exact same thing. It's a compilation of greatest hits, and get them here instead of having to buy 10 different albums. Get them right here. But KTEL is gone, and Now That's What I Call Music is here. And like I said, the first 29 went platinum. The most recent one was released in this past August. Do you know what the number was on it?
I mean, I do because I have the document here, but what number was it?
87. Wow. Now That's What I Call Music, volume 87, was released in August. It's
like, what, an average of more than 4 per year? 87 across 25-some years?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
It's very impressive. All right, so one more quick note about Taylor Swift's 1989, because the reimagined version of the album is now here, being released in time for the anniversary of its debut. It's the album, of course, that ushered in the first peak Swift era. And now, according to AP music writer Maria Sherman, released in 2014 and named for her birth year, the original 1989 signaled a sonic rebirth. Swift had shed the Nashville country roots of her first four albums and announced herself as a full-fledged pop superstar. Previous Taylor's Version releases have been much more than conventional re-recordings. They come with new music, with so-called Easter eggs, and some visuals that deepen the understanding of her work. This project, the newest one, is the fourth of six releases, instigated because her former music manager, Scooter Braun, purchased and sold her early catalog. And so Swift has been re-releasing her old songs as new albums called Taylor's Version to control her own songs and how they're used. And 2014 is just the latest version of that. We're going to take a break here for news, get an update on the weather forecast as well. And then when we come back, we're going to have a lot of sports. And Jimmy Koska is going to talk about the high school football playoffs, second weekend of those. We'll be back with Up North News Radio in just a bit. Yeah.